There is another critical element to the Islamic faith as it was taught by Muhammad and picked up by his successors, and this is the notion of the Ummah Muslima, the community of all those who had made Islam. Now, what's interesting about this idea, well, many things are, but fundamentally what's interesting here is that this is a community which transcends national borders, political borders, social borders, ethnic borders, indeed all borders. So that even today we will occasionally hear hints of this when Islamic leaders in one part of the world speak as if all Muslims on the planet are to rise up as one in answer to their call. Well, as in the dawning 21st century, the likelihood of such a call being answered all over the world, I think, is small. But the notion is there, and the notion is there from the very beginning. Well, at the very end of his life, Muhammad was able finally to return, actually not without some violence and bloodshed, but he was able to return to the city of Mecca, and sort of in triumph. He then returned to Medina and died there. What would happen next? How is there to be a successor to Muhammad? He has been the prophet of God, and indeed in the Islamic tradition, the last prophet. The first prophet had been the patriarch Abraham. Jesus had been a prophet. To Muslims, Christians made this mistake. They assigned partners to Allah. They imagined Jesus to be divine. Jesus in the Islamic tradition is a prophet, a holy and revered prophet, but a prophet just the same. And Muhammad is the last prophet. Well, on Muhammad's death, an old associate by the name of Abu Bakr became caliph, successor to the prophet. Now, in the first place, presumably, this would have implied only successor to the prophet's political, social, military leadership. In other words, no one could exactly succeed to his religious role. Over time, the caliphs would gradually begin to assume responsibility for sort of the custodianship of the faith, and then perhaps gradually begin to have some religious significance ascribed to them. But initially and in theory, they succeed only to the temporal dimensions, not to the spiritual dimensions of the prophet's rules. Now, when Muhammad died, a number of these tribes, clans, groups, call them what you will, in the Arabian Peninsula fell away. They felt they'd made a bargain with Muhammad and they were not about to carry this bargain on with anybody else. Abu Bakr therefore fought a series of lightning campaigns against the apostates, those who fell away, as they were called by the Muslims, and they were eventually sort of brought back between 632 and 634. Abu Bakr and his successors then launched a series of lightning campaigns, which in just over a century, now compare this to the Roman Empire, which expanded for some five centuries. The Islamic Caliphate, as a political entity, was built in just about one century. Muslim armies went right across North Africa, crossed the Straits of Gibraltar into Spain and into central Gaul. Muslim armies went to the frontiers of India and China. Tremendous expansion. Now, we can identify, I think, some reasons for this dynamic and remarkable success. Some of it probably eludes us, but we can, I think, identify at least a few basic reasons for this success. Just before the Islamic armies launched these campaigns, Constantinople and Persia had worn themselves out in a long, brutal series of wars. There was an opportunity. There were deep religious divisions among Eastern Christians. Going back, of course, as we have seen, to the patristic era, there were large numbers of Christian communities who, in those Trinitarian and Christological controversies that we talked about in earlier lectures, had come down on one or the other side of these issues. The Islamic armies, in other words, did not attack a world that was unified against them. Raiding and plundering had been a way of life in Arabia for centuries. Then Islam prohibited Muslims from raiding each other. So now they began to raid others. And finally, the Prophet himself had taught the need to expand the faith. He taught the need for jihad, holy war. Now, this is a term about which there has been a great deal of confusion. In traditional Islamic teaching, the world is divided into two. How many people divide the world into? The world is divided into two. There is the Dar al-Islam, the house of surrender, and the Dar al-Harb, the house of war. Now, initially, and this is, of course, similar in many ways to the Christian experience, the war is to be inside the heart of the individual believer. It is here that one must conquer.